So welcome everyone to our next installment of our Kollel Aharon Veleya classes. We want to thank the Kollel, our mysterious benefactors. Tonight is a Rosh Hashanah class called He Who Laughs Last. I left out the part about laughs best, but we'll get there at the end. So I want to throw a little bit of a biblical conundrum out. Names in the Torah names, biblical names, are definitive of a person's character. So for example, when the Shvatim, the 12 tribes of Israel, are born, each of the mothers, Leah, Rachel, Bilhah, and Zilpah, name their children, their sons, based on prophetic abilities and just an intuitive mother-like understanding of who their child will be, what special attributes they have in the child. When God names a person, then it goes beyond the realm of definitive to something more than definitive, the divine definitive. So such is the case of the second of our forefathers, Yitzchak Avinu, our patriarch Isaac. And yet here is the question that we're going to have to deal with. Isaac is Mr. Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is known famously as the Yom HaDin, the Jewish day of judgment, judgment for us and for the entirety of the world. And we associate with Isaac, with Yitzchak, this attribute, this midah of gevura or din, justice. I had a little fun. We'll do it backwards. Have a look at source 7. The Zohar. You know you're in trouble when we quote the book of mysticism right up front. The Zohar teaches that Abraham served God with the attribute of chesed, kindness. Isaac served God with the attribute of din or justice. Jacob, Yaakov served God with the attribute of tiferet or rachamim, mercy. So Isaac happens to be, and this is not disrespectful, although it's going to sound a little heretical, he is the most unfunny biblical character that you will ever find. If they're going to have a lottery, who is going to be performing with Henny Youngman and Roddy Dangerfield up at the Neville Grand and the Catskills, Yitzchak Avinu, Isaac is not going to make the audition. It's not going to happen. He's not funny. And yet his name means laughter. Now you might say, but that's a coincidence. Well, no, it's not. Because again, God at the end of Parshas Lech Lecha, when he gives this amazing vision to Abraham, to Avram Avinu, of the future of the Jewish people, it's called the Bris Ben Abisarim, the covenant between the parts. He says to Avram at the end that he's going to have his own child through Sarah, not Hagar, not the Yishmael part, but it's going to be his own child. And God says that child is going to be named Yitzchak, Mr. Laughter. So God is naming the child. And then, of course, you fast forward, and you'll see the sources in a minute that Abraham and Sarah, they agree with God. Yes, his name will be Isaac, Yitzchak. What is stunning is there are many different variables. If you've got a Jewish thesaurus and try to look up the word joy or laughter, there are many other possibilities. But the name Tzichok, Tzarichet Kuf, laughter, is used all over the place when it comes to the context of Isaac, before he's born, after he's born, and in the entire 24 books of the Torah. So we're going from Genesis to Chronicles number 2, Divrei HaYamim. There are only 4 other times that word, laughter, tzichok, appears. So it's all over the place in the connotation and context of Isaac. Nowhere else, essentially, in all of the 24 books of Tanakh, Torah, Navi, Ketuvim. Amazing. So we need to understand this. So the question at hand is, Rosh Hashanah is the day of judgment. Isaac is the star of the Torah reading on Rosh Hashanah. Day one, Hashem pakad et Sarah. God divinely remembers Sarah, and he is born. And then he's named. And then the second day of Rosh Hashanah, Abraham takes Isaac up to Akedat Yitzchak, to the famous binding of Isaac. That's day number two, where we have the shofar. That is Rosh Hashanah, the essence of Rosh Hashanah. Again, a day of judgment, the Yom HaDin. So we need to understand, how can it be that laughter and judgment are intertwined? How are they connected? And it sounds like it's a little silly, but it's not. It's actually very profound and hopefully very meaningful when we explore this a little more. So before we go into that, let us talk for a moment about the usage of the word laughter. So let's go very quickly through sources 1 through 6. And Abraham fell on his face, and he laughed. And he said to himself, oh my gosh, will a child be born to one, meaning me, moi, who is 100 years old, and will Sarah, who is 90 years old, give birth? So he laughs with the incongruity, the absurdity of life. Number 2, and Sarah laughed within herself. After I have become worn out, Chazal, our rabbis explain, she didn't even have a makom, a womb, to actually carry a child. That is how old poor Sarah was. After I have become worn out, Sarah says, will I have smooth flesh and also my master is old? And then God's not so happy because she's kind of criticizing God, but specifically her husband Abraham. So the Lord said to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh, saying, is it really true that I will give birth, although I am old? And Sarah denied this, saying, I did not laugh, because she was afraid. And he, God, said, no, but you laughed. So it's laughter, laughter, he said, she said. And then we get to the story in the same parsha, in the same Parshat Vayera of Sodom and Gomorrah. And we know that Abraham, what does he do? He haggles with God. I would not recommend that you try that. When he hears that the citizens of Sodom and Gomorrah, the five cities of the Kikar HaYarden, are evil and have been generations of evil in the eyes of God, and they're going to get annihilated. So what does Abraham do? He prays on their behalf. God, and he questions God, will you do justice? Oh my gosh, it's justice again. It's all about din. Is it fair that if you have the righteous, and there happen to be many wicked, but you're going to kill the righteous with the wicked? That's not mishpat. That's not fair. That's not justice. And he starts haggling. If you find 50, 45, 40, 30, 20, 10 righteous people in Sodom, will you spare the city of Sodom? And God says, yes, absolutely. And what happens when the angels come to Sodom and Gomorrah? We know that Lot has a little Seder for them, a Passover night Seder. He invites his guests in. The citizens of Sodom are not happy, and they're going to murder the guests, and then they're going to murder Lot and his family. The angels say to Lot and his family, we need to get out of here now. God can't do anything until you guys are safely away, because Abraham is your beloved uncle. And so Lot, and I'm just going to make this a little aside, Lot does the very first Jack Benny imitation. So you have a little humor here, okay? Hear me out. Here's the humor. There is something called trup. Trup are the special Masoretic traditional way we read from the Torah. Each letter, each note has a special God-ordained way of reading it. And we do the Torah trop, and there's a trop for the Haftorah, there's a trop for the different Megillot, the other things that we read. So there are four times only in the entirety of the Torah where you have this very strange trope called shalshalet, which literally translated as a chain. A shalshalet you would wear, a lady would wear a chain around her neck. It's only four of them. And one is the Jack Benny one in context of this parsha right here with Sodom and Gomorrah. Because the angels turn to Lot, and they say, Lot, come on, come on, get what you can get, get your little safety deposit box, and let's get out of Dodge before everything is gone. And what does Lot do? He does the Jack Benny. Your money or your life? I'm thinking. It's created right here. How do I know that? Because it said Lot delayed. Vayit mama. He delayed. He tarried. So Shalshelet tells us that he's going back and forth because he is metaphorically chained to his money. He doesn't want to leave the money behind. So it goes back and forth where he is chained and doesn't know, should I leave my money? But I don't want to leave my money, but it cost my life. So there's a little humor embedded in there. But you must admit that what is God doing to the people of Sodom and Gomorrah? Justice. It's din. So look at source number 4. Lot wants to save his married daughters and his sons-in-law, who are Sodomites. So he goes to them and he says to the suitors of his daughter, arise, go forth from this way, for the Lord is destroying the city. But he seemed like he had laughed in the eyes of his sons-in-law. It was a big fat joke. They don't believe. So they perished. Only Lot, his wife, didn't quite make it all the way out. And his two unmarried girls, they leave, everyone else dies. So again, laughter, and truly in the context of justice, of judgment. Very strange. We have to really get to the source. But before we do, look at number 5. As I mentioned, Abraham named the son, his son who had been born to him, whom Sarah had been born to him, Isaac. So there's that name again, Yitzchak. And Sarah said, God has made laughter for me. Joy. But there's the word sechok. Sechok asali Elohim. God has made laughter. Isaac's name. Whoever hears will laugh with joy over me. And there's that word sechok again. And then, number 6. Same parsha. Sarah saw that Hagar, the son of Hagar, this is Ishmael, the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, that he was laughing at Isaac. He apparently had little Isaac up against a tree and then maybe an apple on his head. I'm just extrapolating here. And he's shooting arrows at the apple. Oops! Right? And he thinks it's a big fat joke. Sarah does not think this is a big fat joke. And she says, basically, Garish, get rid of the kid. He's an evil influence who might destroy our son, she says to Abraham. So you know the story. Again, same word, sechok, laughter. All in the parsha that we read on what day? The Yom HaDin, the Day of Judgment. So who do we associate with the Day of Judgment? Isaac, Mr. Unfunny. And yet his name is laughter. So how do we reconcile this? Very, very strange. So let's talk for a moment, shall we, about this interrelationship that when we speak about it and explain it, I think it's going to make sense. I believe that laughter and judgment, one requires the other. I want you to think about this for a moment. Humor, at its essence, laughter, is based on a departure from the expected punchline to the absurd, incongruous punchline. And hence, if it's funny, if it's witty, if it's good, then you laugh. It's laughter. So think about it for a moment. If there wasn't an expectation of normative behavior or appropriate cause and effect, then there wouldn't be any humor. As a side point, our society today is so meshuggah in so many ways, we're upside down, that it's kind of hard to be a stand-up comedian, I dare say, because if you say to somebody, pigs fly. Well, if pigs really could fly in some universe, then the person, rather than laughing at your joke, would stop and say, no, wait a minute, I don't understand. What's so funny about that? Maybe they do. Maybe out in Oklahoma, they get airborne. I don't know. Maybe after a Sooners victory over the Nebraska Cornhuskers. That used to be a big thing once upon a time, right? So what is din? What is judgment? What's the interrelationship? Think about it. Justice requires that any departure from the norm be reestablished. Justice keeps insisting that when you depart, when you leave the expectation the expected and appropriate behavior in any way, shape, or form. Din judgment says, I will not tolerate any type of departure from the baseline of normal behavior, normal societal, interpersonal relationships, whatever it is. Justice requires you keep pushing back until the baseline is reestablished. That is what justice attempts to do. So if you have criminal behavior, somebody's doing something and corrupting and perverting and twisting and departing from the norm, the judge, the police, justice has to weigh in and say, no. This is not acceptable. We are not going to be allowed to keep pushing it to where societal norms become perverse. I will not allow that. And that is what justice does. So hear me out now. Since we said that laughter, humor, is at its essence the departure from the baseline expected behavior, that is why it's funny. Because it's not what you expect. The punchline is silly. Because it's not possible for the pigs to fly. But if it would be possible that pigs would fly, then there would be absolutely nothing funny about my little joke. You'd look at me like, I don't understand. And what's incredible about humor, have you ever tried to explain a joke to somebody? It's impossible. It's impossible. Because either their sense of a baseline of normative behavior is there or it's not there. And if it's not there, good luck trying to explain to the person from a different culture, a different background, a different education, what is funny. It's just impossible to explain it. And you know what's unbelievable? What is the most delicious? I use the word delicious not only because we had a great meal, but I want you to think about what is the most delicious, most perfect type of both justice and humor at the same time. We have a name for it. It's called poetic justice. So when Haman insists on constructing gallows because he just doesn't have the patience to wait a few months for Mordecai and the Jews to be destroyed on 13th of Adar, he just can't wait. He has no savlanut, no patience at all. So what happens to him? He constructs a gallows that he himself will be swinging on come the next day. So how, you say it's ironic, but it's perfect. It's poetic justice. And if it's perfectly done, it brings a wry smile and a knowing smile to your face. You say, oh my gosh, wow. So when Nasrallah picks up that phone call or the pager, and kaboom, and Verizon had a contract with, okay, I'm joking. But you say, oh my gosh, that is so sweet. That is poetic justice. Sorry, I had to throw out there somewhere. I'm not sure about you, but when I read that, like 4,000, I thought it was a numerical, a little arithmetic of how many had died since last October in the wars with Hezbollah and Israel in the north. And somebody said, no, this is what happened today. And I'm like, what? Who is capable of this? And it brings a little wry smile to your face. You say, oh my gosh, this is justice, right? They'll have a new campaign. You know, reach out and touch somebody. Okay, all right. We're laughing. Okay. Now, let's get back to our thesis then. So we asked the question, how can it be that Mr. Unfunny, Yitzhak Avinu, Isaac, our patriarch, is so synonymous with Rosh Hashanah, the Day of Judgment? It seems to be a contradiction. It seems to be something that is a stira. It can't be. And then we said, no, actually it is. Yes, he appears everywhere. Yes, he was born and everything is talked about and read about in the Torah on Rosh Hashanah relating to Isaac, to Yitzhak Avinu. But it makes sense because in a very powerful way, laughter and humor come from justice. And therefore it makes sense that maybe on a personal level, he's not a stand-up comedian, but in terms of the name and the laughter that comes, it makes perfect sense because the source of all laughter is justice itself. So what would that mean for us? And how does that relate to Rosh Hashanah on a much deeper level? So here's where it gets a little more involved. On Rosh Hashanah, we talk about very serious things. Mi yechiyah u mi yamut. Who will live, will die, who will regain their health, who will be sick. Last Rosh Hashanah and last Yom Kippur, when we said those words, we couldn't even imagine October 7th and what that would mean for our people. It's impossible. So we don't know. We take the words of the Netanya Tokef very lightly. We just say them, but it's very powerful. Laughter emanates from the exact same source as tears emanate from. So when you walk into a room bereft of context and a person's sitting there and their tears, you don't know whether those tears are because they just finished watching the scene from Planes, Trains, and Automobiles when Steve Martin and John Candy are going the wrong way on the highway. It's one of my favorite scenes of all time. You're going the wrong way. So you don't know if they just watched that scene and they're crying because they're expressing, you know, you've all laughed so hard that you cry. And yet those tears could be on the flip side, God forbid, where you are thunderstruck and just shell-shocked by October the 7th and you're crying. So the source is the same. So to delineate and separate the two, it's not easy to do. It requires the context of what is going on. You can't even understand yourself. So therefore, there is a correlation between the day in a very profound way and the idea of laughter. But there's more to Yitzchak. When Isaac is first given as a promise to Abraham, God takes Abraham chutzah, outside. And he tells him, Abraham, habetna shemaima, I want you to gaze up at the heavens and I want you to count stars. Those are going to be your children. So what is it talking about? So the Zohar, the mysterious book of mysticism written by Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, has a lot to say here. I'm going to share it with you right now. Okay? Why does it say both to gaze and to look at, to see? They're synonymous, but they're utilized in a different way. So the Zohar tells us that the Jewish people, and you may have heard this, we are not subject to mazalot, to the different patterns of, you know, the Sagittarius and Scorpio and Capra, all the different mazalot, the celestial bodies of the months and the mazel, the luck that we might have from your horoscope. It's not a Jewish thing. That doesn't apply to the nation of Israel. We are above those celestial astrological signs. They don't mean anything to the Jewish people. And this is why it's meaningless to us. Abraham and Sarah, the original names were Abram, and Sarai. In the state of Avram, and Sarai, they would never have a child. The omens, the celestial bodies, the horoscopes, Manam Zushka, interpreting what their future held, they were never destined as Avram and Sarai to have a child. It's impossible. Now, as Avraham and Sarah, that's different. But how do you go from one manifest destiny to something different? You go above the stars. So it wasn't just that Abraham's looking at the stars to count the stars. He's looking from the God perspective, above the stars, back down to earth, from God's divine prism. And through that, the mazalot, the celestial bodies and signs that Bederech HaTeva, nature would not allow Abraham and Sarah to have a child. It's impossible. As Sarah herself says, I don't even have a womb. I can't carry a child. So forget about it. It's gone. It's not going to happen. That's true. But that's Teva. That's nature. You, Abraham, and you, Sarah, are above your Lamala Mina Teva. You are not subject, as the Jewish people, to the laws and rules of nature. So in a very real world that followed the natural order, there's no child for Abraham and Sarah. It's not going to happen. But he's been taught that Isaac is a product of something beyond nature, higher than nature. So the perspective is looking down from above. And that is what the Jewish people are always about. Now, if you don't know that this is true, I'll prove it to you. Do you all know who Pascal was? So Pascal was a very, very famous 17th century Roman Catholic philosopher, mathematician, extraordinaire. It's a great name. Good luck trying to pronounce it. It's Blaise Pascal. And Blaise Pascal said to King Louis XIV, who asked him the question, he said to him, "I want evidence," King Louis said, "for the supernatural." And you know what Pascal's famous answer was? "The Jews, Your Majesty. The Jews. The Jews are supernatural, above nature." Pascal understood this. Someone else who you know very well, named Mark Twain, also was quoted as talking about the supernatural abilities of the Jewish people. Listen to what he had to say in September of 1897. These are the words of Mark Twain. "If the statistics are correct, the Jews constitute but 0.25% of the human race. It suggests a nebulous puff of stardust." Notice it says stardust. Interesting. He gets it. "Lost in the blaze of the Milky Way." He's even comparing us to the stars in the Milky Way, Twain. It's unbelievable. "Properly, the Jew ought hardly to be heard of. But he is heard of, has always been heard of. He is as prominent on the planet as any other people. And his importance is extravagantly out of proportion to the smallness of his bulk." He almost sounds like an author. Wow, it's beautiful. "His contributions, the Jews, to the world's list of great names in literature, science, art, music, finance, medicine, and abstruse learning are also very out of the proportion to the weakness of his numbers." You could add the Nobel Prizes for Physics and Mathematics, which predate, you know, this predates all the prizes that went to the Jews disproportionately. "He, the Jew, has made a marvelous fight in this world in all ages, and has done it with his hands tied behind him. He could be vain of himself and be excused for it. The Egyptians, the Babylonians, and the Persians rose, filled the planet with sound and splendor, then faded off to dream stuff and passed away. The Greeks and Romans followed and made a vast noise, and they were gone. Other people have sprung up and held their torch high for a time, but it burned out. And they sit in twilight now and have vanished. The Jews saw them all, survived them all, and is now what he always was. The Jew exhibits no decadence, no infirmities of age, no weakening of his parts, no slowing of his energies, no dulling of his alert but aggressive mind. All things are mortal but the Jews. All other forces pass, but he remains. What is the secret of his immortality?" That's the Jew, according to Mark Twain. So we have these two amazing people, Pascal and Twain, touching on this idea of the Jewish people, l'mala min hateva, beyond nature itself, beyond, and are literally supernatural. And that's who the Jewish people are. Isaac's birth embodies what they said, that in a normative world, in a world of teva, of nature, there can't be an Isaac. And so Rosh Hashanah, which of course is the creation of our world, our universe, testifies with Isaac and with Abraham and Sarah. It's all about these three individuals, these remarkable individuals, who during the most difficult, dark, trying of times, rose up and were able to understand and accept and perhaps even laugh a little bit at the absurdity of life itself. There is no individual in the history of our world that better understood that life in an instant could be just snuffed out. Think about Isaac's experience, right? All his life, he knows for 38 years that mom and dad are old and they waited 190 years between Abraham and Sarah to have him. And then all of a sudden, God says, "Okay, kill him, bring him up, bind him up, offer him up as a sacrifice." Now, we know that Isaac doesn't get sacrificed. That was never the intent. But no human being in history understood how life really works and how things change and how what we take for granted can be taken away from us in an instant. And Isaac understood this more than anyone. His going up on that mountain, and this is the essence of what Rosh Hashanah is about, the idea that every moment we have is this precious gift, and we take it for granted because it's given to us and just granted to us. And yet it's magical. This world is magical. And Isaac embodies that magic with his laughter. And so listen to this, and I'm just going to paraphrase for the sake of time. Gemara, Talmud tells us at the end of times, God wants to punish the Jewish people. And so he comes to Abraham, the embodiment of kindness. He says, Abraham, your children have sinned. Abraham says, okay, punish them. That's not what God wanted to hear. So then God comes to Jacob, Yaakov. He thinks, I'll do better with Jacob. Because, you know, he knew what it's like to have 12 sons that don't get along. He says, Yaakov, your sons have sinned. What say you? And again, Jacob says, punish them. Again, it's not the answer that God wants. So he comes to Isaac. He skipped over Isaac. And he says to Yitzchak Avinu, to Isaac, your sons have sinned. Now I'm going to read to you from what Isaac says. Again, this is metaphorical. Isaac says to God, Master of the universe. Now wait a minute, God. Are they my children and not your children? I don't understand. When they pronounce Nase prior to Nishma, we will keep the Torah, even before we hear the rules of the Torah, you, God, called them my son, my firstborn. Now they are my children and not your children, God? Furthermore, Isaac says to God, in defense of the Jewish people, how much have they sinned? How many are a man's years? 70? Deduct 20, since you don't even punish a human being until they get to 20 years of age. Okay, so now we're at 50, yeah? Okay, at least 50. Take away half of that, 25, because you're sleeping. So you can't sin when, I mean, you wouldn't think you can sin when you're sleeping. So 25 years. All right, that leaves 25. Deduct 12 and a half of those 25 for praying, eating, going to the bathroom, washing, etc. 12 and a half remains, says Isaac. If you will tolerate them, those 12 and a half years, great. If not, then half should be on me, Isaac says. Half should be on you. And if you wish to say that all of them should be on me, Isaac says to God, I've already sacrificed myself for you on that binding. So I'm good with that. What say you? And God, of course, says, you're Isaac. The rabbis say at the end of time, God is going to make a party when Mashiach, Messiah comes for the children of Yitzchak, of Isaac. Because in the end, his name doesn't mean laughter in present tense. It's he will laugh. Yitzchak. It's future that he will have the last laugh. For all of the tsuras, for all the darkness the Jewish people are going to go through, at the end of the day, we will have that laughter in the time of the redemption. And let me leave you just with this one last little thought. Isaac, at the end of times, is going to represent that laughter for us. Yitzchak, he will laugh. He will personify and embody that Jewish perspective. We've always had that perspective of humor. Think about it for a moment. How remarkable is it that right after the Holocaust, you had the rise of the Jewish comedian? It's not a coincidence. The two are, again, there's a lot of history there. You'll research it. You'll see. The two are interrelated. That as a result and a byproduct, and perhaps as a takana, as a healing process, the response to the nightmare of the 6 million was the Jewish comedian and the Catskills and everything else. That all came directly in the end of the 40s, the 50s, and 60s was the rise of Jewish comedy, Yitzchak. And we already established that close association between the pain of tears and sorrow. And that laughter can be a laughter of tears. It can be a laughter of the humor of life. Isaac understood more than any other human being the absurdity of life itself. What, just how absurd that we're still alive, that we live every day I get up. So my blessing for us all and for the Jewish people is that at the end of our days, we should be the Yitzchak. We are the children of Isaac, the one who gave up everything for God, but that in the end is going to have that laughter. And this Rosh Hashanah, this Yom Kippur, when we go before God, remember the defense of Isaac before God. Remember that laughter, ultimately, he who laughs last, laughs best. Wish everyone Shana Tova, Metuka, sweet, happier.